everybody. My name is Colleen. I'm a compulsive reader. I think Ellie and Mrs. McGurday for asking me to come and be of service. So it's an honor to be able to give back to the program that is in my life. To qualify, on August 4th, I celebrated 11 years of abstinence. My top weight that I'm aware of is 311 pounds, so I've maintained about 160 pound weight loss as a result of this step. And I'll pass around my photo pictures. And one of the sponsors I've had for many, many years had always told me to keep a piece of my clothing. She said, "If you ever get tired of working your program, they'll be waiting for you." So I have my size 24 jeans that actually were too tight when I first came in, but I didn't want to actually go out and buy a size 26 because I lived in the land of denial and didn't want to admit that I actually needed that size. So I put these in my car, and they're there as a reminder to me of where I came from. And, you know, when I came into this program 11 years ago, I was pretty broken down. I wasn't facing a lot of, like, you know, like high blood pressure and high cholesterol and anything like that. That was sort of looming. You know, I had family history of those sort of things, but there was nothing screaming at me, like, you need to do something about this. This is a problem. And what got me into the rooms was, actually, a therapist that I was seeing had mentioned she thought I might find a sort of like camaraderie or something, you know, like helpful. And I was like, okay, whatever, you know. But I knew that I was miserable and I was like physically uncomfortable in my body. That's the only thing I really remember. And I always think it's so interesting, you know, they say that, like, you know, the only desire is the desire to stop eating compulsively. I did not have that desire. I did not know that I really ate compulsively because that required a level of consciousness about what I was doing with food. Now, my experience was I would eat and then I would look down and go, okay, how did I get a third stomach? Or why is it that every time I take a picture, it looks like I have 3 chins? Well, sweetheart, I have 3 chins. So, you know, that would explain that. But see, I was so disconnected, and I always pretty much only looked at my body from, like, here up. And here up was okay, you know, like, it was all right. And but as far as really being aware of my body, the reality was that by the time I came into these rooms, I couldn't avoid being aware of my body because it had taken up so much space. And, you know, I had humiliating experiences of, you know, going into a restaurant and, you know, the hostess brings you over the booth and you go to squeeze in and you don't quite fit. She's, you know, like trying to scramble, like, oh, here, why don't you sit at the table? And I was like, oh my God, like, that's it, you know? Like, before, I could be like, well, eat some of the big meat or the big she is, whatever. And I was like, I had no perception of my body size. And, you know, by the time I started eating, you know, what is it that was I born a compulsive overeater? Did it start? You know, I don't know. Like, I just remember I had a huge thing for sugar. And I know that life became really uncomfortable at a really young age, at an age where alcohol wasn't accessible. But I do remember at, like, the age of 9, we used to have alcohol at, like, family gatherings and whatever, and I remember drinking it thinking, I like this a little too much. I should probably stay away from it. You know, so like that addict, you know, capability was obviously in there somewhere. But, you know, sugar works really well, so like, why do I need that? And, you know, that was pretty much the course. And it didn't start to show up on my body probably till I hit about 8 or 9 years old, around the time I started eating puberty. And then it just became a constant battle. The first time I remember being put on a diet was I was 10 years old. My mother brought me into Weight Watchers, very common story. And I couldn't understand why they're called the old people. Okay, when you're 10, like somebody's 25 is old, right? So, and the other thing was that they had the scale behind the wall. So you had to walk behind them, and I hated getting on that freaking scale. And then they wanted me to eat things like cottage cheese and stuff. And I was like, I already feel like I stand out like a sore thumb. Why do I now want to eat stuff different? Like, why can't I just have ice cream and pizza like my friends? You know? So, I'm very lucky that I had a very close-knit group of friends, but I did experience, you know, like being made fun of at school and things like that, or my favorite was when I was in high school, and this is ironically after I'd lost some weight, I was sitting at a bus stop, waiting for the bus to go home, this was towards the end of my freshman year in high school, and this guy, I'll never forget it, in this light blue Ford Mustang, like an old 1960s one, like 6 inch head outside the passenger side window and said, "You're fat, you're ugly," you know, and I was like, I mean, it just, it's like, well, I can't win, you know, like here, I've been doing better, you know, no, it didn't matter, you know, and, you know, throughout the interview, he just mirrored what I was thinking about myself. Because I could do all I wanted with food and exercise, but if I didn't begin to change my thinking, none of that was going to matter, you know? And so I didn't have a long history of dieting. Like, I didn't just kind of feeble. Like, I'd be like, I'm going to start tomorrow. My version of dieting was at night, I'd go to bed and I'd be like, well, I'd please be skinny. And then I'd wake up and I would be skinny, and I was like, well, that didn't work. But come on, you know, and God's going, yeah, you have to eat less and exercise more. Like, you know, because what I was asking for was something outside of reality. You know, it talks about in our literature that is at its one full flex in reality. So the reality is when I consume so much and when I don't burn it off, I gain weight. It's really not that difficult. I was asking to be outside of, like, the laws of physics is what I was asking for. Yeah, I've been asked a lot of things like that. But, you know, the reality was that I wasn't ready until I was ready. So I was about 28 years old when I came into this program, and I had to be at a place where I was really, like, no more, you know? And why then? I don't know. I just know that when I came in, there was a level of, like, like, you guys, well, first of all, you were very friendly. And I was like, they keep saying, keep coming back, you know? And you talked about food in a way that, like, nobody, like, I was not, like, I didn't have compulsory reading buddies, the lonely fat chicks in my family, like, there was no, like, this is how we all do this, you know? And so a lot of it was secret, a lot of it was hiding. But you guys talked about it out in the open, and there was a sense of, like, oh, wow, like, okay, like, there's something like me. And, you know, when I came in, I remember, like, the second meeting I went to Shriners Sunday. That meeting was very overwhelming. It's like, wow, there's, like, all these people there and all this stuff. And I went to the newcomers meeting beforehand, right? And I was like, and she, you know, she pulls out the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was like, okay. You do not need to drink today. You need each group that are explaining how this works. And I asked her that. I had no idea what she said because I really wasn't interested in the answer. You know, I just wanted to be all defiant, right? And then I remember going up and asking this one girl, like, where are the steps? And she's like, oh, I don't know. And she's like, I just looked, oh, she doesn't know where they are. Like, what is your place, you know? But, you know, the very first thing I got the day before, when we spoke, interestingly enough, was an anorexic. And I thought, sweetheart, not eating is not my problem. But she sat with me after the meeting, and she answered my questions, and she said, you know what, I just suggest that you go to 6 meetings before you tell me this decision. And I was like, oh, that's easy. So, you know, I want to say welcome, you know, we're really grateful that you're here, and we hope that you keep coming back, and I definitely recommend checking out 6 meetings before you make any decisions. So the fourth meeting I've been to, you know, when I decide to do something, I do something. So I went the next day, and then I went that night, and then, you know, the next night after that, you know, I was like, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. So the third meeting I went to was out in the valley where I live, and they had the steps on the wall, and I walked in, and I was like, huh. And there was, like, God in, like, every single one of those steps, and I was like, interesting. I mean, I have no knowledge of 12 steps, so I didn't understand, like, what any of this was about. But I did have a relationship with God, albeit with one I was designing, which is explaining why I was suffering. And God has had nothing to do with my food, because, you know, when you grow up with people, like, if you just do this, or if you just do that, you begin to think, like, okay, like, I should know how to do this, like, I should know. But, like, you couldn't explain to me that when I started eating cookie dough that I had to finish the whole batch. Like, I don't know why, you know? Or why it is that, like, I had to make a second trip to the frozen yogurt to be healthy. But, yeah, when you put M&Ms and sprinkles to it, it's not so healthy anymore, you know? Or when you always have to get the 16 ounce. By the way, so fascinating, I never understood the purpose of a smaller meal. medium and it's I really didn't. Like, why would you buy something that small when you can get something so much bigger? You know, like, what's the point of a bagel when you can get a super bagel? You know, like, you don't have to go back and you don't have to pay twice. I mean, like, I just didn't understand it. It made no sense to me. And I'm always fascinated when I order something small. I'm like, wow, because I don't need the large or whatever. But, so when I saw Gravis stuff, I knew, okay, I'm some of what I was told. And I didn't understand, I still didn't understand what y'all were talking about. Like these like apples that were flying around, and I saw people who were skinny, and I saw people who were fat, and I was like, okay, like, what? You know, like it's all very confusing. But part of my soul knew that this is where I was supposed to be. And so, I was really good at following directions. And such as by getting a sponsor, so I got a sponsor. It was a very nice woman, and she said, you know, call me whenever you want. So I never called her. She didn't want to follow her. That wasn't much too long. So after a few months of doing that and suffering my way through it, I mean, I managed to establish an abstinence with her, which I'm really grateful. And my abstinence then was 3 meals a day, nothing in between, and 2 snacks that's necessary, snack of those foods. And that was it. There was no specific foods that I put on my abstinence. And over time, that's evolved. And I've added my alcohol to it. Because for me, my abstinence is twofold. It's one is the behaviors around that I'm not eating all day long, because that's just not a good idea. And two, that there are specific foods that are I'm allergic to that trigger me, that once I start eating, I can't stop. And I know what those are, and I knew those were coming in. And it just took me a little while before I was willing to admit that I was powerless over them. And, you know, and of course, the freak thing of like, oh my God, what's going to happen? You know, I'm going to die if I don't get to eat whatever that is. And I always think I'm going to die, but I don't. I started working with a woman who was more like precise. You know, I had to call her a certain time, and I needed that structure, so that worked. And I worked with her for another, I don't know, I guess so just after I got my year of abstinence. And then at that point, I remember very clearly like, sitting in a meeting. And they were reading from the doctor's opinion. And said the only release to have was just is entire abstinence. And I was like, huh. And I remember, I mean, I lost about 30 pounds. Because when you stop eating, oh, and that's when I stopped eating recreational sugar. So when you lose, you know, when you stop eating recreational sugar, the amount I'm eating it, you lose about 30 pounds. But when you're over 200 pounds, you don't really notice the 30 pounds. Like my bags, my pants were a little baggy because I was sweating. So I still had, you know, in theory, another 100 pounds to go or whatever. I didn't really know what it would be at that time. And I thought, so what am I doing? You know, like this weight that I think is protecting me from something isn't. And it's an illusion. And I was like, okay, so I'm done. You know, and I kind of reached a breaking point. The sponsor I had, and I got a new sponsor, and she was 100 pounds and kept her weight off for years and years. And I basically just did whatever she told me to do. And she said, you need to make this program the most important thing in your life. And she said, you put yourself on first, everything else falls into place. And again, I was like a really good rule follower. So I was like, well, obviously she knows something, because you know, she knows what she's doing. And I listened to what she said, and it saved my life. It absolutely saved my life. And you know, I went through the process of the steps with her, and because that's what I need to change my thinking. You know, they talk about in the big book about we have to let go of all our old ideas. And I remember reading that line. Like, really? Like, all of them? Yes, all of them. At the very least, I needed to question them. Because they're usually based on something like one circumstance or an experience that happened. And I create a little story around it, and then I live my life based on that. And the reality is that that was what happened in that moment. And I get to choose whether I'm going to take that with me into the future. But see, when I'm eating and when I'm in the food, I can't make that distinction. It also talks about, I believe from the doctor's opinion, that we cannot differentiate the truth from the false. So when I'm eating my alcohol foods, whatever they are, like I cannot see that, like, the madness in which I'm living. You know, and that's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need my fellows. Be like, Colleen, do you are you feeling yourself? You know? And that was another thing. Like, I didn't want to leave. Like, I had an
experienced early on of being betrayed, and I was like, this is close to me, and I was like, I'm gonna have none of that. Like, I don't need your help. I'm good. You know, I'm such the, you know, I always imagine like this, like, woman who's like totally drunk and she's tripping over herself. She's like, I got it. I got it. You know, like, that's what you need. You know. And I mean, I'm still stubborn, but I just, you know, taper down a little bit. And hopefully I'm not so stubborn that, you know, I don't listen to my sponsor. I mean, the sponsor I had for many years really trained me, because I get on the phone and she'd go, what do you not want to tell me? And I'm like, oh, God. And I could not tell her, because then it would be like, So, but she trained me, because now I got on the phone with the sponsor right now, who doesn't have to even ask that question. I just go, okay, so what I don't want to tell you is, you know, because what I've learned is that anything that I'm trying to keep hidden, you know, I can't, there's no light there. You know, it talks about in Bill's story, you know, it's a simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. We had to turn all things over to the Father and God, the desire to work on. So I have to bring it into light. I have to bring the 12 steps into it if I want sanity, if I want peace about it. Even the things that I don't want to. And the interesting experience for me, you know, it talks about step two, like coming to believe in the power of rhythm in ourselves. And that power of rhythm in me has shifted and changed a lot over the years, and continues to. And it's the more I come to believe that God wants something to do with whatever area of my life it is that I'm afraid to bring God into. And, you know, it's usually something that I have shame about or fear about or anger over, and it sits somewhere in my heart where it's dark and murky. And when I'm willing to go into that place, God's just sitting there like, oh, good, you're here. Okay, now we can get to work. You know, like, he, whatever, is not afraid to go there. I'm the one that's afraid. And the only reason I think God wants something to do with it is because that's my definition of God. And if it's a power greater than me, then it cannot just simply be my definition. You know, it has to be something more than that. So, you know, I went through, and I, you know, the experience, like, I'm not going to tell you that, like, going without food was easy. It was simple, so it was uncomfortable, you know. But I really held strong to what they talk about in step 7 and the AA 12 to pain to be reaching Christ in your life. And so my sponsor said to me, fight through life to be uncomfortable. And I'm like, what? You know, because that's like one of those things you get, like, that puppy dog look, like, huh? You know? And I was like, fight for my right to be. I remember, like, that became my mantra. Like, I would just say that over and over, because I'd finish a meal and be like, like, that's it, that's all I get. Yes, right, my right. I'd be like walking around, I used to be a school teacher, and I'd walk around and say, I'm fighting my right, and I'm sure it's useful, like, you know, and being able to, like, say things to people that I can't say, because as a compulsive overeater, I did not, like, lash out at people typically. I usually just internalize and push it down and make myself wrong. And, you know, it talks about a lot in our literature about character defects and pride. I totally didn't get that. Reverse pride, ding, 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 oh, yeah, all over that. I mean, like, I can write that like a merit badge. Or she, for me, for me, for me, and other people. You know? Like, it was really about, like, how it was the worst thing and how I had to apologize for something that you need to apologize for because then you might like me better. You know, I spent so much of my life trying to twist myself into a pretzel to be what I thought wanted me to be, but I didn't know who I was. You know, and so ironically, by putting down the food and by working the steps, I get to discover who I am, and not just discover my limited version of my understanding of myself, but actually, like, who I can become in God's eyes. You know, whatever your definition of God is, or even the whole notion of God or higher powers, like, right, keep coming. You know, it doesn't have to be anybody else's understanding of it, you know. And so, you know, the steps for me, the fourth step was, it was important. It wasn't this sort of, like, sky-opening, like, experience when I did that. It was really funny. To be honest with you, because what I saw was I'd done the same thing over and over and over again, just different people, different situations, but I, like, portrayed the same attitude and actions, and I was like, it's insanity, oh my gosh, what an idea, it was insane, right? So, It was actually very clearing for me, like an experience to like see the reality of how I live my life. And I thought, well, I don't want to do that anymore. So from that, we identified my defects and characteristics 6 through 7 and began to look at, like, okay, how do I now turn these over to you and how am I going to stay? And I love the 7-step prayer about, you know, turning over and the things that God thinks are useful or not useful. Meaning, even that, like, I may think that being a victim at this moment is the worst place I should be, that I should not be doing this, whatever, but maybe for some reason it's serving a purpose right in this moment. I don't know. You know, and that's not for me to determine. If it's standing in the way of me connecting with you, yes, that's a call. Because that's the other thing, and that's what I've gotten from working with steps, that it's all about connecting with other people. Like, I can't even tell you, 11 years ago, if I was standing in front of you, I wouldn't be able to look anyone in the eye. In fact, it took me a long time, even the meetings, when I would share, like, I really just kind of look up there, you know, because I was afraid to look in the eye. You know, I was afraid to connect with you. I'm not afraid to do that anymore. That's huge, you know. I was at work yesterday, and I'm helping to facilitate this team, like, goal-creating process. Whoa! There's, like, 30 people now have a different idea about how to do this. That's money. You get that? They just do it the way I want it. It's so much easier, right? But what I've learned how to do from working with steps and living my life on their spiritual path is how to hold the space for all these ideas and how to get people to communicate with each other. That's something I couldn't have done before, you know? Because if I didn't know how to control it, that was a problem, you know? And so what I had done as a result of living in my disease was create a life that existed about, like, this big, all the while dreaming and wondering about what a real life would be like, you know? Like, fantasizing about what it would be like to, you know, have that kind of a position in a job or do those sort of things or have this relationship or get along better with my sister, or whatever it was, you know. And that's been an interesting experience, too, with my family. And I used to laugh when I hear people share meetings about how they work the steps, and all of a sudden their family changed. And I was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Yeah, that's kind of what happens. But, you know, they didn't change. I changed. The eyes through which I see them changed. Because I learned, you know, what do you do with somebody, you know, resentment towards you pray for them, you know. So I've spent years praying for my family. What do you know? Actually very loving people. You know, and the longer I learn to just accept them for who they are, the better my life is. In fact, the more I just learn to accept things in general, the better my life is. You know, learning to accept them. And one of the things that for me, because sometimes I can't even get to acceptance, I go, well, I can accept that I don't accept it. Like, I need, like, easy stuff, you know, like, sometimes. Because some days I'm just, like, in a funk. And I'm like, yeah, this all sucks, you know. And then I have days where, like, I feel like I'm walking on the clouds and there's butterflies and it's, like, this total spiritual experience. But as an addict, I think that's how it should be all the time, right? Like, more of it now, you know. But it's that ebb and flow. Like, I couldn't handle the ebb and flow. You know, that's why I ate. It was really easy. I ate, numbed out, checked out. Good. No problem. You know? Like, my goal was sure to be flatlined. The flatline is dead. You know? And I don't have to do that. It's like somehow, by taking the path of these steps, I got the courage to live out of nowhere. Like, out of nowhere. And not even the courage, but the desire to live. You know? Because when I came in, I was just on this little path of suicide, you know. I didn't want to do it any faster, but I was, you know, slowly plodding my way through there. So, you know, I want to thank you for allowing me to share part of my experience this morning. I hope it's been really helpful, and thank you for the share.
Hi, and you mentioned before internalizing anger and not lashing out.
What do you do? Okay, so you asked me, I used to internalize anger and not lash out. I've learned healthy ways of expressing anger. I scream into pillows, get my car, scream, write nasty letters to people and then tear them up and burn them. Going out to the ocean late at night, screaming really loud, you know, telling there's not too many other people around is good. Yeah, just doing things like that, getting out.
Hi, can you guys discussion.
Did you, after being in program for a little bit of time, did you experience maybe you're beginning and learning the trick of recovery? And if so, how did you
Okay, so did my disease learn the tricks of recovery? My experience with that would be that when I would use my program to beat myself up, like, you know, the measuring stick, you know, I'm not doing enough this, I'm not doing, you know, whatever the conversation, I'm not doing enough, I'm not being spiritual enough. Like, I think my experience with that would be when I try to spiritualize my way out of being human. You know, I have experience to be like, how come I didn't float through that? Well, because you were, like, having feelings, you know. So that would be, you know, that would be my experience.
Thank you. I was thinking, especially as a teacher, where you encounter people who have opinions about you, usually young people, if you've gotten more respect, if you've gotten to be a smaller size, how have you dealt with that?
Okay. So if I got more respect, you have gotten smaller size. Well, I'm no longer a school teacher anymore, but I did lose my weight while I was teaching, so they saw me evolve. I had different experiences. I wouldn't say so much respect for my students. They're pretty much, I mean, they were middle schoolers, so they're nasty to each other, but they're pretty nice to the teachers. There was this, like, surprise sometimes, like, you know, when they came back after the summer kind of thing. What I did notice amongst the teachers, you know, and I don't know if it's a woman thing or what, but, like, the ones who looked disappointed when I had to put my weight back on the next year. I mean, there actually was a really interesting thing, experience that I had much longer story than I did. But, yeah, people have different reactions to that. But, you know, one of the things that I learned to do was I learned that what other people thought of my weight was none of my business. I would weigh, whether they approved of it or they didn't approve of it. And so as long as I kept reminding myself of that, you know, that usually seemed to be the best way to go. I've learned that being at a healthy body weight is a different experience in general, because when you're fat, everybody's like, you're not a threat. I'm turning them a threat now. And that's been a different experience for me. So what I learned to do with my sponsor told me was just to be a little bit nicer, you know, to kind of put people at ease.
How do you mesh working a program assistant through the HD program first? How do you mesh that with the requirements of making a living? And interacting with the people closest to you?
The question is about time. Right, about time. Okay, so the question is about how do I keep my program first in terms of time? In the beginning, I went to like 5 to 7 meetings a week and things like that. I don't go to as many meetings. But there are other things that I do. I literally have a calendar. And I calendar out my time. And the time that I spend doing my programming, meaning like whether it's planning my food or like preparing my food or the time for my meetings or my sponsee calls or something, like those get slotted in first and then everything else falls after that. And there are times when it may be less involved in my life or whatever, and you know, then I have to balance that out. You know, maybe spending more time in meditation or, you know, things like that. So, it's like a non-negotiable because I've gotten the life that I have by doing that. So, in my experience is that when I push that aside or pretend like it's not that big of a deal, I take the consequences for it. Like, I'll notice that, like, if I go too many days without doing my 10 steps, like, it just begins to build up and it just doesn't feel very good. So,
that answers your question. Yes, you talked about before program had to kind of disconnect with your inner body and even with your kind of shoulders and belt. Was there like a change in that? And if so, did it just kind of crumble away, or was there like a definite effort to?
Okay, this connects with my body and how that changed. Yeah, it did begin to change. I mean, I remember, like, around the time I reached a healthy body weight, I was walking with a couple of people, like, in a like, outdoor mall area or whatever, and I saw three sets of legs walking, and I couldn't figure out which ones were mine, you know. What I learned to do, because some of it happened pretty rapidly. I mean, like, after a year of African cancer, I lost some of the other 130 pounds in the next 18 months. So I would literally, like, sometimes close the bathroom cabinet and be like, whoa, I did not know who I was looking at. And I thought, okay. And I don't remember if I talked to my sponsor about it specifically, but I began to say a prayer of, God, help me to see me as you see me. And that began to shift. So there was definitely a concerted effort. Interestingly enough, over the years, I've worked with another woman's program to do this body image workshop, and so that has helped me a lot. You know, you think I'm not in the 30s when I get that workshop, but I do it because I need it. But it just continued levels of acceptance. And I didn't have a specific notion in mind of what I was going to look like. I had no idea, and I didn't know what that healthy weight range was going to be when I started either. So that was kind of helpful because I didn't have any expectations of what it might be. But it's a process in my experience.
Thanks, Paula, for the share. Can you talk about your experience with the 9 steps?
Sure. My experience with the 9 steps, the first 4 step I did was predominantly lots of living amends, lots of praying for people and forgiving them, and looking at forgiving myself. When I've done other 4 steps over time, there were a couple where I had to go and speak to people from my past. And, you know, it wasn't like grave things that I had done. There was this guy that I had worked with who we were partners together in this, like, camp thing. And I just kind of checked out. Like, I was and taking that. Like, I did very irresponsible things that were not like me because I was in such, like, in my disease. And so I don't know that it affected him per se, but I felt like, you know, I talked about my sponsors and I said, I feel like I need to make amends for this, that I didn't do my full part there. And so I went and I spoke and he was like, oh, okay. You know, like, it was a non-thing. The biggest thing for me has been the living amends. You know, like showing up for my family and being there, and not having it be about me, you know. And, you know, I showed up for my sister's wedding. I was there for a whole week before she got married, and that was a really big deal because a couple of years before, I didn't show up at her residency graduation because there was a rift between my father and I. So, you know, things like that.
So, like, I have problems with food, and I have problems with people.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a teacher, and I'm trying to teach a lot of kids, trying to teach them how to collaborate, with you need to collaborate. I realize, when I'm meeting with my colleagues, I hate to collaborate. You know, I'm not persuading them, but I'm better than they're not doing it my way. And then you mentioned now in your career, something that happened to you, that you set a space for collaboration, allow people to do it. So anything that you would love to do,
okay, so how do I set a space for collaboration? Can I make it not about me? That it's my job to be there and to help people through the process and just kind of hear back from what they're saying, make sure that their voices are being heard. And not have it be about how good of a job I'm doing or not doing, or what my investment is and how it should turn out.
It's really about here.
Oh, no. I mean, I definitely have not. I'll say, like, this is what I think, you know, but I have to say it and let it go. You know, I can't say what is to it.
Okay, thank you very much. Where is it? So, you know, you talked about it, you know, a relationship with someone, and you seem to go from feeling like you're news and the warning that could be people starting to do the sequel items, say, how many minutes anger towards the person, and you express it without screaming at them with everything. So,
right, got it. Okay, so how do I express anger without calling someone an a-hole? Well, so what I've learned from the 10-step principle is that every time I'm disturbed by a person, place, or thing, I'm the one who's disturbed. So it's usually what I've made this interaction mean. So people, in my experience, people do what they do. They don't do things to irritate me. That would take way too much time for them to think about that. And they usually think about themselves. So that's not happening. So if I'm bothered by something, I have to look at it and go, okay, why am I bothered by this? And I'm usually bothered by it because I've made it mean something more than what they actually just said. Like, I've taken what they've said, and that now means that they think this, and blah, 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 a bunch of stuff they've never said. So in the moment, breathing is helpful. I can probably count on one hand the number of times I've called someone an a-hole. So I don't have lots of experience with that. Maybe two hands to count the times I've called them that, away from their face. So I really like the only power in anything is in what I can change. So sometimes it's been about creating distance from people. And, you know, leaving, like, yeah, creating time and space between me and other people that were not healthy for me, which, so creating, having good boundaries, which is something, by the way, I did not have boundaries when I came into this program, but ironically, by having boundaries around my food, I learned to have boundaries in my life. It's the most amazing thing to me. So that those are some of the things that, that I've done.
Thank you so much. One question, two parts. You mentioned that you will call your mom's friend, she would say, tell me something you like, tell me another issue, give a big example of what something like that would be. Because my second part of the question is, can you talk a little bit about your relationship with your sponsor and how you structure that relationship?
Okay, so what is an example of how I told my sponsor something I didn't want to tell her, and instruction on the relationship with my sponsor. Okay, well, there's too many things that I can think of to, so I'll give you one example. I was talking to my sponsor the other day, and I said, what I don't want to tell you is that I was thinking that I should be doing this better than I'm doing it. I can't remember exactly what it was. And so she goes, oh, so we don't do a wee program today? And I was like, you know. It basically, like, it was like I thought I should have figured out how to handle this situation at work, and I couldn't, you know. And so that would be, it's usually like I'm thinking I should do it on my own kind of thing, and I should know, you know. I could shoot myself to death. And then how I structure my relationship with my sponsor. Well, I've had different sponsors over the years, and they've been different kinds of relationships. The sponsor I worked with for quite a while, honestly, I was afraid of her, you know. Like, I didn't want to not do anything she said because I was scared of her. And that changed over time, and then we had kind of reached the point where it seemed like it was time for me to move on. And then the sponsor I have now, it's a bit more of an equitable relationship. Like, she's just a little bit ahead of me on the path, and I see it as her, you know, she just kind of, like, creates an opportunity for me to walk the steps, and then she provides her input on how she sees things. But at all of my sponsors have always, always encouraged me to continue to develop that relationship with my higher power, because they told me that that was where it really belongs. Because at the end of the day, we're all just human beings. And what I've learned how to do is have disagreements or not see eye to eye on something and still have a relationship with somebody. Because that was a skill set that I didn't have. I thought, if we didn't agree on something, like, that was it, it was over.
you know, like, I need to change or it was going to end. So I've learned how to, like, sit in uncomfortableness with things like that. So that's kind of a different structure. Yes?
You mentioned, thank you for your share, that you had a relationship with God and you came in and shared your right. But could you elaborate on how that has changed? Because you said it's God, your understanding doesn't exactly work. How your, you know, how your idea of what your higher power is and spiritual practices changed.
Sure. Okay, so my idea of my higher power who came in, how it's changed. So I grew up in a spiritual tradition that I still practice, although it has a lot more meaning to me now. And so my ideas of God were very much formed by that. So God was typically a man. But the way I looked at it is that there were certain things that I thought, well, God isn't concerned with this part of my life because clearly God's got bigger things to do. You know, like, he's also solving world hunger, that's still a problem, God's busy. God doesn't care about what goes on my plate. You know, and so, you know, like, literally learning how to bring God into all the little areas of my life is how it developed. And, you know, like, turning everything over from, you know, whether or not I picked up the phone and called somebody, whether or not I bought a pair of shoes. I mean, like, it sounds really silly, but, like, I just had to guess that, like, you know, if this power greater than me created every part of me, then why would that same power want something to do with every part of me? And in terms of how it's grown and changed, I mean, I have my prayer meditation practices, part of the 11 steps that I do every morning. But, you know, that isn't, like, so that I can have these, like, sky opening, like, dove descending moments. It's actually, for me, just so that as I go through my day, I'm not as rattled by things. That's what I find. And that I experience God in people and in situations. I mean, I could be driving along the freeway, really pissed off about being in traffic. Somebody cuts me off, and then I'm like, and on their bumper sticker, there's a smile. And I'm like, really? Okay. You know, like, and it's usually like, Colleen, stop taking yourself a damn seriously. Like, you will get there when you need to get there. And you've been all rattled and been out of shape on your way there. It's not going to do anything other than make you rattled and out of shape when you get there. You know? So, and it's not going to happen on your timeline, sweetheart. You know? It's really about learning to be okay in the moment, whatever that moment is, and being surprised, and being willing to be surprised by how God shows up in that moment, whether it's through somebody else, through a bumper sticker, through a song on the radio, through just, like, hearing my niece's laughter on the phone, you know. It's just a million different things that I never imagined I would see God in. Okay, we're out of time.